Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, flag a message out to us, and we pulled in the bay there. Drop anchor, stand by for fruit inspection. The captain says, send a message back to them, we don't have any anchor. We went right on up to Mount Island Navy Yard. Went in there. And when we pulled in there, they put us right into a dry dock right quick. And right on the upper end of this dry dock, we had these valves already made to fit this. You know, they figure how long it's gone and everything. Had them all sitting there, ready to...
More than one?
They have two different sections.
Oh, they? Yeah.
Anyway, they had us move off onto an old ferry boat, move our stuff. Next morning I left on a 30-day leave and came home. And in the 30 days I went back. They had that bow welded on them, and they were stringing guns and stringing cable and stuff like that, mounting guns and stuff. And we was in the States 3 months, and we went back out. So anyway, when they got us all ready to go, I had the fighting off watching in the Ford fire room, or Ford engine room. I was on the throttle then. So anyway, we got underway and went under the Golden Gate Bridge. Captain called down the phone. Says, just give me all the speed you got and hold her for 4 hours. And so anyway, we wound her up. We got 36 knots. That's about 40 miles
an hour.
And oh, it was rough. And we had 69 recruits on that, it was. And every one of them got seasick. One guy, he got sick, he begged to have the officer come down and shoot him. Anyway, they had an awful time. They just puked all over that ship. And anyway, we've been out 2 or 3 hours. I knew he was going back in for Liberty that night. And one guy had never been seasick in his life before, never had been. And he come down to go to watch the engine room. I looked at him and I said, God, what's the matter with you, Nick? God, he says, I'm sick. I never was sick before, but he said, I'm sick now. I said, well, I'll go get a bite to eat. I'll come back down and I'll take your watch. We'll get in tonight. Eat? He said, who the hell could eat? I went down to the mess hall. There wasn't no mess hall at cooks there. They was all sick. I just helped myself, you know, what I wanted. And there wasn't nobody there to eat at all. Anyway, we come in that night. When we pulled in, we tied up. I run the shower, got a mess, good of a bath. Put my clothes on and went ashore. I wasn't going to stay on there that night. Stinking, oh, it did sink. Nobody hardly feel like going ashore either, you know. Anyway, I went ashore.
Did you ever get seasick?
Yeah, when I first went aboard, I was seasick. Well, I was sick too. Anyway, we went for a little trip down to San Diego then for about a week, I guess. And when we came back to Frisco, getting ready, we knew we was going to leave Frisco and go back to Pearl. And so anyway, well, some of these new guys, they had their wives there in Frisco waiting for them. And so anyway, half the ship got to go ashore that night. So they put the rig out. Anyway, had some of these new guys, 5 or 6 of them, I guess, on for watches. They wasn't worth a damn to you anyway because they didn't know what the hell was going on yet. So anyway, they come to me and they said, God, are there any chance of getting to go ashore? We're going back out there, we may not see our wives again. I said, well, I'll see what I can do for me. So I went up and found the engineer officer. Told him, I said, hell, I said, they were the damn to us on here. I said, why don't you just let them go ashore? Let the signal guys stay on the watches. So all these guys got to go ashore that night. Oh, they thought I was the greatest guy in the world, you know. When we got to New York, one of these guys' wives, she sent a bottle of whiskey over with him, a pint of whiskey for me.
Oh, yeah?
For that night. Anyway, we left Frisco then. We went back out to Pearl Harbor. Alvor picked up the shell on we talked. Yep. We joined the fleet up there, screening the carriers. Man, there was carriers out there, and you couldn't believe it, you know, by that time. And they would bomb them, Guam and Saipan. And so we screened them, I don't know how many days. And finally they moved the battleships, the new battleships all in. And we went in and screened them all day, and they fired on Guam and Saipan all day long. Next day we went in with the old battleships, small cruisers, and they fired on the island all day. The next day, well, they was all there, that's when they made the landings. And well, we thought we'd have that island. Boy, they had a hell of a battle on them islands. And anyway, they're on the north end of Saipan. Why, these Japanese, they finally run right out of the point. Instead of giving up, they jumped in the water and drowned themselves. Boy, they're floating around down there, they're all puffed up. Boy, when you go by, some of them stink like hell. Anyway, while we're fighting this battle there, this one day, they ordered us to the Marines having trouble. And there was a kind of gully up through the Japanese were in there tight, and Marines couldn't get them out. So we just drove, run the ship right up the mouth of the gully there, close to shore. We opened up right, five inch, and all around the aircraft gun. I don't know how long we shot there, but well, we must have shot for close to a half hour or something, right up that gully, boy. They give us orders to cease fire. Anyway, they perked up afterwards. Boy, we cleaned them out of that gully. Anyway, finally, the Japanese, they sent a bunch of carriers down around the back way and coming in from the west. They got them out so close, so the Americans, they knew where they was at and watching them kind of come. And so the Japanese, they took off. The Americans, they shot them down, and they called it the Great Turkey Shoot. God, they shot all these Japanese carrier planes down.
How many, do you have any idea how many planes they shot down?
I think it's 300 or something.
Really?
But we didn't even get to fire a shot from the place we was at. Anyway, and the Japanese didn't have any more planes on their carriers out there, hardly. And they turned to run, and the Americans took after them, and we went with a bunch taken after them. And we run for 2 or 3 days, but we couldn't catch them. And we had to stop, take on fuel, slowed us down. And anyway, they got away from us. I think American planes did get one of them.
How many carriers were there in that group you were chasing?
I think the Japs had about 3 or 4 carriers in that group. Anyway, we came back in. They got all secure there, along the Saipan. There's orders came for us to go to Pearl Harbor. So that way we went to Pearl Harbor. We got to Pearl Harbor. There was orders for us to go to San Diego. We didn't know what was going on. Anyway, we went on to San Diego, and when we got there, we had orders there to go on through the canal, up the East Coast to New York to join the Atlantic Fleet Run Convoys. And so anyway, these guys, they all call their wives to meet them in New York. So anyway, we went down through the canal. It was really quite a sight, you know, we go through that canal. And got on the west, on the east coast, like, they told us we had 2 or 3 hours liberty, some of us. So we went down. There was a big bar down there. It was a genuine German beer, you know. God, we'd run in there and drink that German beer. I imagine that was probably built by the Germans before or something. Anyway, it was a good beer. So anyway. Next day they held us up a while. Convoy an old freighter up to the mouth of the Mississippi. So we took that up the mouth of the Mississippi. And we had to go back down around Florida. And when we started back, they had a hurricane, went up the East Coast, sank a bunch of ships, one just like us in the hurricane. And anyway, we just weren't up behind them. Right? The water wasn't too rough where we were. So we went into New York, and when we got in New York, we had a guy on there, name was Pete Regra. New Jersey. And he was ex-bartender in New York. And anyway, we was going on Liberty that night, so we all got old feet. Feet, tell us where to go in New York. None of us ever been to New York. And he said, stay out of the nightclub. He says, they charge you hell of a price for a drink. He says, go to some neighborhood bar somewhere. He says, they'll treat you right in them neighborhood bars. Well, a whole bunch of us got on that. He says, I ain't going with you, I'm going home to see my wife. And anyway, a whole bunch of us got on the subway at the Navy Yard. He said, be sure and get off 34th Street. Well, we tell everybody on that subway, be sure and get us off of 34th Street. They laugh at us. And, before you got to 34th Street, there's big flashing signs. Couldn't have missed it to save us all. Mm-hmm. And we got to come up topside. There was a bar right on the corner. Into the bar we went. We'd ask old Pete what was the best. We'd all flush with whiskey and money in. He'd ask him what the best kind of whiskey was. Oh, he said, I.W. Harper. Don't ever believe that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we all sit down, ordered around I.W. Harper. I was third in line. First guy bought the first round, and the second, but I threw him down $20 bill. Drinks weren't too high there. Anyway, this guy just stepped up and filled us all in. Left my money lay there. Next guy ordered around. I says, hey, you forgot to collect the last. Oh, he says, that was on the house. Well, we all have to thank him for on the house going. Out here, they never give you a drink. And so I bought that round then. We sit there and got drunk and had every third drink is on the house. Boy. But anyway, them two bars there, they just got so people, the ship just lived them two bars because, you couldn't find no place else. Well, if you went no place in New York, you'd find places like that. Boy.
But you knew that was a good place.
We knew that was good. So then, anyway, we start running convoys to Africa. Now, I think I told you four trips to Africa, but I believe it was six. I believe it was six trips for me. Anyway, we had to, every time we'd go, we had to go to Boston. Not Boston, but Portland, Maine, mm-hmm. to go through the Antioch submarine, Diem, I think. Anyway, we'd go up there and run through this train, and we'd go down and pick up a convoy down in Virginia, down there. We'd go down there and pick up a convoy, usually about 100 ships a convoy, and we'd have we'd go in the lead every time, and we had what they call destroyer escorts. They'd build a lot of them as like a destroyer, on as small as
smaller. Yeah, fast.
And, yeah, it was pretty fast. And anyway, we'd have about 8 of them. There was maybe 10. And when we'd pull out at Portland, Maine, Virginia down there, right, we'd pull out, boy, we'd have one or two blimps up over, some little blimps, and they'd patrol all day long. When night did, night happened, away, sometime that night they'd disappear, they'd go the next morning, and we'd go back. Anyway, we had good luck, we never lost any ships out of our convoys.
I was just going to ask you if you ever did lose
them. No, we never did. Anyway, most of our convoys went to Iran and Africa, and it was quite a sight to go down into the Mediterranean, and you go right by what's the big rock there?
Gibraltar.
Yeah. Go right by that every time. Oh gosh, I'd love to go more to North Shore there. That'd be something.
Where'd you say you went in Africa?
Oran.
Huh.
And anyway, we took part of our convoy one time to Sicily. And anyway, we sat there and watched what he called it. It was a smoking little smoke.
Mount Etna?
Mount Etna, smoke, little smoke coming out of it.
She's doing that right now, a little more smoke.
A little more smoke, Anyway, we went down to what's it called, Missouri one time. Took a few ships in there. Boy, I'll tell you, when the Americans took that over, they had no battle in there. The one building in there didn't have shell holes.
Really?
Because really, that's an avenue. Anyway, after we came back down there, Sicily, there's a couple of guys, they got pretty well drunk up. They decided they were going back. I think it was three of them. They decided they were going back to Missouri, to Sicily. So we went down, and the French, they had a goddamn little old tugboat sitting there, and had it all steamed up. They went off and left it. These guys got on and got her underway, and they were going to go back. They wouldn't have no idea which direction they were going. But anyway, they got her underway, bumped into another ship or something. Anyway, they caught him, so they threw him in jail overnight. So the captain, he went over to get him, told the friends and them he penalized him on the ship, on our ship. So they turned him over to him. So anyway, then some guy on there was an officer, and he hadn't been on there very long, but he was an ex. Lawyer. So he took the case. Well, anyway, according to his deal in the case, the French didn't have any business leaving that thing abandoned there anyway. he got him out of there. Well, the captain, he was almost there to go back over to Africa.
Henry, what time would this be? I mean, this was towards the end of the war.
Yeah.
So it would be what, like 44 or 5, something 45, like that?
45. Yeah, 44, 45. Mm-hmm.
Did you know the war was ending?
It ended while we were still letting run convoys.
Oh, it did?
Over there.
Uh-huh.
So when it ended there, we come in with a convoy. And we went into the Navy Yard in New York. They overhauled us, and they sent us out, started us back to the, we had orders to report back to San Diego, and we got down just off of Cuba, and they dropped the first atomic bomb.
Well, that's where you were, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and they dropped this first atomic bomb, and so then they gave us orders to go into Guantanamo. they call it Gitmo Bay.
Yeah.
Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
They go in there and wait, because they knew they were going to drop another one. And so anyway, they dropped the second bomb and the war ended. So a few days later, they sent us back up to New York and put us in the Navy Yard and started decommissioning. So they decommissioned it there in New York, and they just frankly had everything done, and they were trying to get rid of men, you know, send them different places. And so they asked me if I'd like to come back to the West Coast, and I told them, yeah. So they said, well, we'll give you 15 days, 5 days travel time, and 10 days liberty to report into Bremen. So I grabbed that and got on the train there in New York. When I got to this old, it was an old car, old had a little stove in the corner that they burned coal in. And, oh God, it was hard seats in it. It was one of the oldest cars I think they had on the line back there. When I got to Chicago, I was black as a Kinnegar boy, black. Anyway, I had to wait there for 3 or 4 hours. And boy, I spent all my time trying to wash that damn coal dust and black off of me. Anyway, when we left there, we had a real good train come through LeGrand. And boy, I rode that LeGrand. It took me 3 days, 3 nights, 72 hours to get a grant.
How long had it been since you've been home?
Oh, I flew home once when I was in New York. They gave me 10 days liberty to leave. And I flew home on one of them old two-motor jobs.
Yeah.
An old Ford two-motor job.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me 28 hours, I think it was, to fly home. They landed. Oh, about 6 or 8 times, I guess.
Pendleton. Really?
Huh.
That's just about time I was born. It's about time you were pulling into Pendleton, right?
Yeah. Anyway. One of the Fisher boys on the train that come from Pendleton. Howard, you remember Howard Fisher?
No, I don't think so.
Anyway, no. Up here. Anyway, his brother, he was on there, he was in the Navy. And when I got on the train, I seen him, I knew him. Anyway, him and I, we sat and visited all the way across the mountains. My dad, I called him up and he come after me. Brought him home too. They lived in that with Leroy Smith there.
Oh, okay.
That's the old Fisher house. Anyway, I had to go back then to Bremen, so I figured, well, I got to Bremen, I'll probably be there a week or two. I have a lot of time to visit my sis and her husband. So anyway, I got over. Went on liberty that night over to Madeline Day and stayed all night. And so I told them, I said, well, on the sea at night, went back to the Bremen on that early ferry, went, got there, and here my name was right on the board. It was about 13 or 14 of his names on that. Go to Portland, go on to Memphis. Well, call him up and told him I guess I wouldn't on that night. So anyway, they got us all gathered up, put us on the train, sent us to Portland. And so anyway, we got to Portland Rams. They were late, you know. They didn't want to bother with us in Portland. So they just throw your gear over in the corner and go on liberty and come back in the morning. So that's what we got. I don't remember where we went. We went somewhere and drank a lot. I think we got a room somewhere. I don't even remember. Anyway, we got back there the next morning. We was laying around there waiting for them to take us to Mifflin up. Finally, this one of them guys with his old Bentman, he's a Had he been in the Navy 30 years, he went up and told me, he said, my God, he said, I've been in the Navy this long, and he said, we never was in port, we didn't have a telephone at the end of the dock, and he said, they've got to have a telephone down there, call them up. So they finally called down there. Yeah, we're still waiting for them guys. Where in the hell are they at? We got them here. Get them down here. Boy, I'll tell you, them guys, they just really woke up around there. Run out, they got an old flatbed truck. Run in around there, throw your gear on there. So we sit on the back end of there, down through Portland, and went somewhere. Anyway, we got down there. They were sitting there waiting for us. We walked across the gangway onto the Mifflin. So we got aboard, they picked the gangway up and set it off, towed the ropes off and down the river we went. So anyway, they showed us where a bunch would be and stuff. And anyway, we took down the river, and I kind of enjoyed that, riding down that river.
I was just thinking, I bet that was kind of pretty.
True. Anyway, we got out into the ocean. Then I went down the engine room, looked it all over real good. Then when he come down, him and I, we talked everything over about it. See how everything worked. Then when he said, "Hello, Oliver," he said, you're pretty sharp on this stuff. Well, I said, I've known that Selfridge long enough, and I said, everything works the same, only it's got different sizes and different places for valves and stuff. And so anyway, we took off. We started on around the northern route to go to Japan. And so we got up there, we steamed along. Somebody made a mistake. All of a sudden we stopped. And God, when we stopped, she was sitting there rocking. God, it was rough as hell out there. Anyway, I'd run to the engine room, see what was wrong. And we found out they put the fires out in the boilers. So they had to get the boilers lit off again and steam back up. So I went up on top side. So I walked out on top side, took a look. Boy, you know, swell just coming at you, looked like it's 50 feet high, and it was just rock. Wasn't any water coming over, so it didn't worry me none. Some guy ran up to me, "Hey, Oliver," he says, "Hey there, don't you know you ain't got any business up there on top side without a life jacket?" I said, "Hell, you need a life jacket for it. Ain't any water up here." I said, "Get on a tin can." I said, "Yeah. Why, now do you need a life jacket?" I said, "The water comes over top of them." And anyway, I just ordinary like walked out and looked things all over and went back down. And so I went on watch that night. This engineer and officer, he was new on the ship. So he told Bidman he wanted to stand and watch it with him at night to find out something about the engine room. And Bidman, he didn't want to bother with him, so but Bidman, he said, "Oh," he said, "you stand and watch it, Oliver. He's the smartest guy I ever seen." So this guy, he come down, Dan watches with me. No way to go along right one night. Well, anyway, this night after this, he come down. He would laugh at me down. He says, "My God," he said, "we're doing all right." He says, "The captain was never so happy in his life as when he had dinner tonight. He had to tell us about the guy on top side, his tin can sailor, and he wasn't a damn bit scared." Captain said, "Hell, I'm scared." He said, "I found out no use being scared when I had a tin can sailor with me." Mm-hmm. And anyway, I never told him it was me. I knew damn well he knew who it was. But anyway, he stood watching for me there. So one night, we go along, start losing vacuum on our generators. God, I jumped up. I seen that gauge go down. I jumped up and I run. And I pulled off and air injectors. He had about four valves he had open to change, closed to get got their air ejectors on. I'd close this valve and quarterback, and I'd run to this engine air officer down around here, close this valve or open it. Every time I close a valve or open one, well, I'd run into him. Anyway, when I got all through, it was gauge went right back up 15. Boy, I was real feeling happy. And then an officer said, "Well, Oliver," he said, "just go over and sit down a little while." He said, "When you get your air good," he said, "I want you to take me and explain to me what the hell you're doing." Mm-hmm. I told him, I said, what I was doing. Well, he said, "I could see that." He said, "I didn't know what the hell to do." So I took him all through it and showed him how he opened this valve and closed this one. Oh, well, he says, "That's the way it says in the book, all right." But he says, "I had no idea where the valves at down there." He said, "I'm sure glad you told me." Bedtime on one, I could do just about as I'd pleased on that ship. So anyway, we went on to out to Sasebo, Japan, picked up troops. And the officers, they got to go ashore, but none of us enlisted men got to go ashore at all. Anyway, we loaded troops all night. Anyway, they brought back an old Japanese rifle forever. One of us carried got my Japanese rifle. And anyway, I told them we got back to the States, we could send them home. So anyway, we brought these two back to San Diego. We was there a few days. They set us out then to Pearl Harbor and picked up troops at Pearl Harbor. Took them back to San Francisco, so then they decided to decommission it. So anyway, we was there in San Francisco. Anyway, I don't remember how long we was there. We was there quite a few days, and they was talking about having taking all them ships out for the atomic blast out in the Pacific out there. And so anyway, I volunteered and signed the rig, and I thought I was going to go. And I thought I was going to go help take the old Saratoga out. And anyway, finally one day there was orders for us to get ready to go. And so anyway, I put us on a transport and headed us for Guam. There was only 6 or 8 of these kids had been on the Mifflin with me. Mm-hmm. And I was going, they was all broke. I had back probably $50. So anyway, we'd go along and all I need cigarettes. I'd give them a couple of dollars. We got to Guam. We was out of cigarettes and money too. And so anyway, he says, "What do we do?" So we went over to try to get paid. And the guy said they didn't want to bother with us. All your pay records didn't come with you. The lying devils. Mm-hmm. They was there all the time, but they wouldn't pay us. And anyway, finally somebody said, "God, let's go to the Red Cross." You know, Red Cross, hell, ever. So often they'd come around with a drive and you'd give them money. And so anyway, over there, they wouldn't give us any cigarettes. Got out of that. And I asked him, I said, "Well, how about cash a check for me?" I said, "I got a checking account back home at the bank." "No, no, God, no, they wouldn't think of cash, man." I said, "Yeah, well, hot damn hell will I give that Red Cross any more money?" So anyway, the next day then, I went down and asked Liberty to go down to the bank of Ghana, that's the capital of Guam, and said there's a bank down there. So anyway, I took my checkbook with me and went down there, flagged the guy down the jeep, rode over to the bank, went in, Navy officer in there, and I told him my troubles. Red Cross wouldn't do anything for us. And he finally says, well, he says, I don't think you're trying to pull my leg. He said, it wouldn't do you any good anyway. They would catch you sometime. And he said, I'll cash one for you for $10. So I went back and bought $10 worth of cigarettes. Next day or two, they put us on one of them Kaiser carriers. We rode up to Okinawa on top of that. And I just hoped we'd have a plane take off or land on that, you know, whole trip, but they didn't. And anyway, they broke the pay records out and paid us, the guys that was going there. The rest of them, they went somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Never did see them anymore. Anyway, there's one guy that made the chief with me on the, I don't know what he called, old Malumbi, he went with me. So we went up and we went on the Salisbury Sound. And so anyway, I put my tight in there. So anyway, while we were on the Salisbury Sound, we went down to Philippine Islands back. Then we went over to Tsingtao, China. Mm-hmm. Tsingtao.
Written down right here.
Anyway, we went over there and we stayed over there for about 6 weeks. And well, that was really interesting over there. And anyway, we went back out to Okinawa. And so anyway, my time got up then. And I was supposed to get home, you know, I was supposed to get me back in time to get my terminal leave. I went up to see the exec. He says, the captain ain't gonna, we talked that over, and he said, he ain't gonna turn you loose to go to the Philippines again. So anyway, finally went to the Philippines, and I got off. Rode a supply ship, not a supply ship, but a big one.
Like a transport?
Big old transport yeah. Back to the States.
Mm-hmm. Remember how many days it took you to go from the Philippines?
I don't remember.
A couple of weeks probably anyway, huh? Or maybe more.
Yeah.
So you're back in San Francisco now?
Yeah, back down to San Francisco. Anyway, they didn't keep me there too long.
And you got to come home?
Yeah, they mailed in my discharge. He sent me home on terminal leave.
How'd you feel when you really realized you survived the whole damn thing and you were going to get home?
I never thought too much about it.
Yeah. You pretty excited about getting home, though?
Yeah. Nothing ever looks as good as when you go somewhere and see the Yucatan Valley.
How old would your folks have been when you were? Would they been in their? They were a little older when they had you, weren't they? Or were they?
Yeah.
They were probably real happy to have you home.
Oh yeah.
Your mom probably spoiled you a little bit when you got home.
Oh yeah.
That's good. So that was 1946. Did you say
47?
47. Okay. So you're home. How long were you home before you got married?
Oh, not too long.
Really?
I started going to Thelma. I decided I'd go to get married. She was at Willems. I wasn't quite 35, mm-hmm. 34. She was 20.
20. Now, did you guys know each other very much before? Huh? Did you know each other very much before?
No, before I met her. Mm-hmm. She took care of my brother's kids down at Elgin. I met her down there when there was one leave before.
Where'd you guys get married at?
Down here in Somerville.
Did you?
Had an old guy down here, his name was Archer.
Uh-huh.
And you know where the Wagner kid, Johnny Wagner's old house is?
No.
Right back of the Oddfellow Hall.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Anyway, this old Archer's house is right across the street from that.
Oh, I remember.
That big vacant lot this side.
The church there?
It's a big church. Yeah. Anyway, he married Wade the Nanny, and Charlie and Ida Sanderson.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He was a preacher here in Somerville. And the church he preached in was on that back street. It goes down.
Yeah.
From the church corner ways, across that corner.
What, do you remember what kind of church it was?
Yeah. Methodist Episcopal South.
Really? Methodist Episcopal South.
Yeah.
I never heard one of those.
Never heard of it?
No.
Well, it was the first church in Somerville.
Was it really?
Yeah, according to that Rick Orman granddad there.
Yeah.
And he furnished all the timber, all the lumber for it.
Did he really?
Yeah. And anyway, he was real religious. And anyway, then they built one right north of Somerville where the fort was there.
Mm-hmm.
Methodist Episcopal North, so I don't know. I thought maybe my granddad was a Southern sympathizer, but come to find out, no. He had a brother got killed fighting for the North.
Yeah.
Died down Texas down there somewhere.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, so you got married. Where'd you guys go to live?
Huh?
When you guys got married, where'd you go to live? Right here. Have you been living here your entire married life?
Our entire, we got married on a Sunday night.
Yeah.
We worked like hell getting the house ready.
Yeah.
And then we used this room here, the dining room and the kitchen. We didn't use the bedroom or upstairs.
Was it a brand new house?
No.
No, it was an old house.
It was an old
house.
It was built in 1893.
Was it really?
And they had just... They put some lights in here before we came here. They just dropped cord here and there.
Yeah.
And anyway, when we got married, moved right in here.
What's that, 50-some years?
55 years.
55
going on to 56.
56. Huh. You guys didn't go on a honeymoon?
No, oh God, no. We couldn't afford no honeymoon.
No honeymoon. And you were working for Wayne and...
No, I... They wanted me to start farming.
Yeah.
And they rented me some land, and I used their machinery and farmed.
Uh-huh.
Done most of theirs for them.
Uh-huh. What'd you raise?
Wheat, mostly.
Mostly wheat.
Wheat and barley.
Wheat and barley. And this, but you had... This wasn't horse farming, was it?
No.
No, you had tractors.
Yeah, they had a Caterpillar tractor, and I used it. And then about a year later, I bought a John Deere Model 8, second-hand one.
Yeah. Were things kind of hard to get then, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got that.
Remember what wheat sold for back then? It was pretty good there in the late 40s, wasn't it?
I don't even remember.
I think my dad or something said it was $4 back then, which was a lot of money or something.
Well, I seen it pretty damn low.
Yeah.
I remember in the Depression days when our birds down here bought that place. $0.27 or $0.29 a bush or something like that. It was real cheap.
How many acres would you have farmed when you were farming for Wayne and Anna?
All together? 550.
550.
Yeah.
And you did most of it yourself?
I did most of it.
Yeah. You remember what kind of combine you used?
Well, I bought a little combine, the first one I had. I only cut 6 feet.
Was it all
Oliver? Little Oliver.
Little Oliver?
Yeah,
really?
Little Oliver combine.
Little 6 footer.
Yeah. And I bought an old second-hand combine, cut 14 feet.
No.
Yeah. I had only two combine before that, parts they had one set down here, and it had a 12-foot rig on it. And they bought it in 27, I think it was. And anyway, my when they first bought it, my whole grain was a team and a wagon and the Embler.
Good. Yeah.
And anyway, it's 300 grain. And boy, that's a long trip with the old team and wagon.
Now this was before the war, was it?
Yeah.
Gosh, I bet. How much could you haul in a wagon? How many pounds?
About 100 bushels.
About 100 bushels. So that'd be about 3 tons, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. How many trips you make a day?
Three or four.
Three or four.
Sometimes you get in at 8, 9 o'clock at night, and then you have something left for you to eat there or something.
You still have to take care of your team, too, do you?
Yeah, you have to take care of your team. Yeah. You got up early in the morning and take care of them. Breakfast. When they had the horses on there, they had 8 head of horses on the combine.
Yeah.
And they bought a 30 Caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
And later they bought a D4 Caterpillar. Mm-hmm.
Were they pretty prosperous?
Oh, yeah.
Were they?
Yeah.
Yeah. How old would they have been when you started farming for them?
Oh, hell, he must have been 65 or 70.
Yeah. Yeah. Did he live to be along, be old?
He must have lived when he was past 80, I imagine.
But Wayne and Ann, they both lived in their 90s, didn't they?
No.
Didn't they?
Wayne got up to his 90, and he didn't.
Oh, didn't she? And she was your aunt?
She was my aunt.
So she would be your dad's sister?
No, my mother's sister.
My mother's sister.
She was a Sanderson.
She was a Sanderson too, okay. And they never had any kids?
No kids. No.
Did they always live in the old place over here?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the house, that was moved out of Somerville,
that
right?
That was moved out of Somerville. Wayne told me that when they moved that out of Somerville, of course, Annie and him wasn't married then. Yeah. They lived in the house, mm-hmm. and they moved it. They moved with an old stone puller,
mm-hmm.
and they hooked this thing onto it and take it, wind it up and take it so far.
How did they hold the stump puller down to pull a house?
Evidently, it must have drove pegs down.
Oh, okay. And then they just stayed in the house.
Yeah, they stayed in the house.
No, you're. Yeah, well,
Hugh was born over at, where the water runs in over.
Over there, Reinhardt?
Reinhardt, yeah. At just above, well, just where that road goes down to the river, just above there.
Uh-huh.
Back on this side, that was the old hill house. That was where Hugh was born.
Well, did Hugh live with Wayne and Aunt?
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
That wasn't unusual in those days, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never met.
Well, so let's go back to when you got home. So when did you have the first child?
Huh?
When did you guys have your first child?
About 3 years later.
3 years later.
About 3 years.
And her name was?
Ann.
That's Ann. Okay. And is that the one that lives in town?
No, she lives about there.
Oh, okay. I mean, she's the one that has the antique store. Okay.
Yeah.
And then when did the next one come along?
Ann was born in October, and Carol was born in a year. She was born on Christmas Day.
Was she really?
Yeah.
That's quite a present. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to Eldred, and once I was one at duck hunt. Because we told her we were going to be a duck hunt man. Then I was starting to have pain. So anyway, when they come out, got me. So we went back to Elson. Then when she was up there quite a while, having pain with Aunt. She didn't want to go. Anyway, we finally took my brother-in-law's car and we started looking around. She said, slow down, slow down, slow down. Don't go so fast. So we got up there. You know, she wasn't in the hospital over an hour or so. She had Carol. Anyway.
So it's Carol's a Christmas Day baby.
Yeah, she was born on Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm reborn. It's November.
And what year? Remember?
She's 50 years old. Oh,
okay. So she's been like 53 or something like that, 52. So yeah. Then you had three, you were married and three kids, huh?
Yeah.
Kind of changed your life a little bit, huh? That kind of changed your life a little bit.
Yeah, I bet. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't take a nickel for, wouldn't give a dime for another.
So you basically, from the time you got back from World War II, you farmed constantly. When did you actually kind of retire, though? From, I mean, you did at one time.
I farmed till I was 75 years old.
Is that right? And that was that farm on Parks' land too, or just your own?
Yeah.
Well, hell, then that was.
I didn't farm 100 acres of that little town. I didn't farm that. Mm-hmm. But I farmed all the rest of it.
So you're 75. Did you ever have a hired man?
I mean, part of the time.
Yeah,
I used to get Donnie Sanderson to help me.
Was Donnie about like then what he was now? I mean, did Donnie like to get drunk back then?
God. You never do. Are you going to have it the next day or not? Like a few kids over here one day. And when I went to town, Donnie was plowing over there on the creek. So they heard that tractor running, sitting down there idling. So they went down, and dear old Donnie was heading a bunch of beer. He went down the summer and got him a bunch of beer. He was laying there drunk. Anyway, another time when I just need to be working for him. He was supposed to come back Monday morning. He didn't show up. Kind of needed him on the bed, so I went up to see Tom. And Tom had no idea where he's at. Finally, somebody said, he's over to Peterson's yesterday, the day before yesterday or something. So I went up there. Peterson lived over on the creek up here. Yeah, he was here. He was drunker than hell. He had a bottle. Took off on his machine. He had a little machine he rode on, you know. Took off on that and go home. Well, anyway. I don't know. A couple of them, I think Dallas and somebody went looking for him. They found him. He was laying up on the hill up there. So anyway, they got him home, sort of, you know. Another time he got drunk and he fell off that machine right in the damn ditch up there north of Tom's. Mm-hmm. And the water had run down that ditch freezing. They found him. Somebody found him. And they thought he froze to death then, but they came home and he thawed out.
I remember I heard somebody, I think Steve told me about that. So. Well, was he the only hired man you ever had? Or?
No, I had others.
Well, did you put up your hay loose?
Huh?
Did you put up loose hay then, or?
Well, when it first started, then I finally got my baler. Had a lot of trouble that damn thing.
Yeah, I hate balers. Well, what did you when you were putting up loose hay? Was that with the tractor, or was that with the horses?
I mean, horses.
Yeah. And the big old
Jackson Fork.
Yeah, Jackson Fork. Yeah.
Yeah, I purchased. They had a. That barn down where they live, one over just across the creek there,
with
the cold, 80 acres in there, and then they had a big barn right down there on the big where Oliver lives, and this barn here had four barns.
Oh, really?
And we'd haul hay and clear down below Somerville, make two trips a day, it'd take three wagons, haul six loads of hay a day. And fill all them barns and sometimes build a stack or something.
How much could you haul on a wagon? You're hauling with a wagon, right?
All the time we put on some big loads on it. High as we could get her.
Yeah.
Oh, Huey's loader. He was a damn good loader. He loaded more. All as long as we could get her up there high enough, he could fish her off her as far as he'd put her up there.
What, they had pretty good. A bunch of livestock? Was that hay for cows?
Yeah, cattle. They run cattle in the mountains up here.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Yeah, they used to be old 8 or 10 of them had stalk down, more than that.
Really?
Run stalk up there. My dad run stalk.
Was that, was that on government land?
Government land. Uh-huh. Yeah. They built two cabins up there for ride for stalk.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, when the cabin up at Findlay Creek, there's a picture of it down some of it on the wall. Anyway, why, my dad and a whole bunch of them built that. Dillard Chilton, Clyde McKenzie, and I don't remember who else, Art Burns group on that too.
Is anyway, that cabin still there?
No, the government built it, burned it down.
Burned it down.
And then they built a log cabin over on the end of the Pedro Ridge, way up the Wolf Creek up in there. And that was a log cabin. And Frank Oliver, John Sleppy, and Hugh Park, Earl Park, Frank Woodle, I think, helped on that. Anyway, they built that up there, and so anyway, we went up there one year riding for cattle, I went with them, and so we got Dickens' dad to haul the lumber to Florida, and he went up and come across the old trail on the back end, and we took that off and tied horse behind each one and put a bunch of boards down each side.
Yeah.
And we went right down that damn ridge across the cabin. And we put a rope around there and slid her down to the bottom there,
where
the cabin was, for the cabin. Boy, what a noisy thing. I helped do that.
Well, was there somebody stayed up there with the cows all the time?
They hired somebody.
Yeah.
Anyway, Audrey's brother, he herded it up there quite a few years, a guy helps. And he held himself in this cabin up here.
Really?
The
one that's gone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not the log cabin.
The one filled or Findlay Creek.
Why, do they know why he hung himself?
No.
Just got suicidal.
He was an old bachelor. He never did get married. I don't know. Nobody ever did know why. Just why he hung himself.
Who found him? Remember?
Hensley. Mm-hmm. Hensley kid lived here in Somerville, and he was camping up there fishing in Dry Creek. And so he went over to visit a guy that evening. Next morning went over to the house in the cabin, and the old guy was hanging there. I scared that guy to death.
I guess so. Well, didn't somebody hang themselves down here in Aunt Mary's house, too?
Yeah, that was Frank Woodle's dad.
What was it? Was he the owner of the house?
Yeah. No, he built the house.
He built the house.
Yeah.
And then he hung him to
Bill Woodle.
So that had been Mary's dad.
No, Frank's dad.
Frank's dad, okay.
Frank's dad.
Well, where did Mary...
She was a Sanderson.
Oh, she was a Sanderson, okay. Yeah. All right, I'll get it all straight. So. Well, hell, they had a lot of people hanging themselves around here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, see, his second wife, she got to play around with Iron Man.
Oh, yeah?
And that's the reason he hung himself again.
Oh, really? Like that. When did that happen? You remember?
No, it was
after the war?
Before my time.
Oh, before your time. Oh, yeah. Wait. Before.
Yeah, before I did more.
Well. What kind of cows did they have back then? Were they Herbards or?
They had a lot of Herbards.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of not Holstein.
Angus?
No, there
no.
Very few Angus.
Very few Angus.
Hell, didn't they call them?
Shorthorns?
Shorthorns. Yeah.
Shorthorns. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're nice cows. I had a nice Shorthorn cow.
Well,
kind of funny, you take them cows out and put them out up there in the fall. Well, a whole lot of them old cows, they'd come home by themselves, bring a bunch with them, and have to ride for the rest of them. Do you know Eddie Brog, do you, McGrath?
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, I know.
You know Eddie?
Yeah.
Well, he used to come out and ride with them.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, him and there was three of them, McGrath, and they'd come out and stay at the cabin with them, ride. And anyway, Eddie, he'd ride with my dad.
Yeah.
Anyway, he thought my dad's the greatest guy in the world. Eddie, and my dad thought Eddie was about the greatest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he is a nice man, isn't he?
Yeah.
I met him. He used to, when I lived up by Morgan Lake, he used to ride his horse up there, and he rode through, and that's where I learned. Now, he owns this place right over here, though.
He sold it.
Yeah.
Sold it, yeah. He also owned that orchard above my dad's up there for a while, too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And he bought that first, and he bought this over here. Well, I guess this over here is his father-in-law bought it.
Yeah.
Chris.
Well, who was his father-in-law?
Oh, Chris. At Chris's Market, my grand.
Oh, I see.
At the grocery store, my grand.
Yeah, Ed's got some pretty interesting stories himself. He told me some stories about the Depression and stuff. He's got some dandies.
Oh, yeah. Betty, he always just acts like he just tickled death when he sees me, you know, guy.
He worked for Gosses.
He worked for Gosses. Well, I think he owned a little interest in there or something. I'm not sure. Anyway, he worked there for years.
I got to tell you a funny story. One of the old guys up here, he told me, he said, you know that Ed Brog, he's Gosses' illegitimate son.
He's got an illegitimate son.
Well, no, that Ed Brog was Gosses' illegitimate son. And I said, well, I know, I never heard that before.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either, because Ed was raised back in the...
He was raised back somewhere.
Back east, so.
No, him and Hugh Snyder. Can't think of the other guy's name. They used to come out and ride. Anyway,